Welcome to the Seattle Astronomy Podcast, conversations about the cosmos with an emphasis on space and astronomy news of interest to amateur astronomy enthusiasts. I'm Greg Scheiderer, your host. I'm also the writer of the Seattle Astronomy blog at seattleastronomy.com. The total solar eclipse of August 21, 2017, will cross the United States on a path just 70 miles wide. Seattle Astronomy is exploring places along the path for viewing the first total solar eclipse to touch the continental U.S. since 1979. The last state on the path before the eclipse goes on east into the Atlantic Ocean is South Carolina. I spoke with Tom Falvey, education director at the South Carolina State Museum in Columbia, the state capital.
We're working with our city and with our local visitors bureau to kind of line up citywide type things. For the museum itself, we are planning to be open every night from Friday night through Sunday night late, and possibly even Monday night if, you know, we might consider a 19th hole recap kind of time to get together. And of course, being open late for us means we would have the observatory open every night, an opportunity for people to look through the big 12-inch Clark telescope and kind of get excited by doing some observing beforehand. And so that's some of it. We're working on a big gala for Saturday night. We don't know who will get to come and be our guest of honor, but we hope to bring a few people in who could be kind of special guests, possibly lecturers or some other kind of entertainment. And that would be a big Saturday night ticketed event. And then during the day, throughout the weekend, we'll have special guided tours of our historic telescope collection. So we have a really wonderful collection of antique instruments, 6,000 square feet of historic telescopes, which I think will be great for some of that audience who will come to see this type of thing.
I was reading about that collection on your website, and that sounds really fabulous. Can you tell me a little bit about what's in there?
Sure, yeah. The real focus of our donor's collection, and our donor's name is Robert Ariel, and Bob was started collecting in the 60s, and his real love was American instruments, so he started collecting early American refractors at some point in the 70s, I suppose, and collected, 11 Alvin Clark instruments, which are absolutely beautiful. The oldest dates back to 1868. We have two Henry Fitts telescopes. One Fitts is from Erskine College, which is in a town west of us. And Erskine College, the Henry Fitts there is what we believe is the oldest surviving American-made observatory instrument, so not the oldest American telescope, but as far as something with a mount and a clock designed for observatory use, there were a couple prior, but this is a very old instrument, 1849. And then we have another smaller Fitts, so just a beautiful collection of American instruments, totaling 26 telescopes. And then we have one side dedicated to the European collection. European side really is just more of a kind of a good mix of all the great makers, almost all of the great makers. So some wonderful Dollond instruments, early Gregorian reflectors, and some fairly rare things, some beautiful rare Zeiss instruments from the early 20th century as well. So it's a great collection, beautifully displayed. So I think it'll be really nice for folks who come with that specific type of interest.
Well, and the observatory also has an old vintage Clark refractor, is that right?
Yeah, that was, it's a 1925 telescope. It's a Clark, so this would be the Corporation Clark. So the glass is 12 3/8 clear aperture, and it was originally shipped from Germany. It's Zeiss glass and was ground by the Clark Corporation for Columbia University. So it was part of Columbia University's physics building there in Manhattan until the 1990s, and that is when it was moved here. So we were fortunate that our donor got a call. People knew he was such a Clark nut that they were able to get his attention, and he helped to secure that telescope and bring it here. And then since, of course, any kind of motor drive that was in it is long gone, and now we have made it kind of a go-to instrument. So kind of a strange thing, but there are a few of them out there, antique telescopes with go-to software.
it's cool to see that the museum has a really great astronomy program with this, the observatory and the telescope gallery, as well as the planetarium, too.
Right, yeah, we built the planetarium as part of the expansion in 2014, and so now we have a 55-foot dome. It's an ENS D5 system, or Digistar 5, so it's a full digital dome with, we do have a laser projector for fun as well. So we will definitely incorporate the planetarium into all of our activities. We'll have, we're working on some special programming, and we actually hope that some of the folks who have some capability of creating shows will be able to assist in developing some of the graphics for different types of eclipse programming. So our planetarium person is hard at work, or will be hard at work, developing that. So like I said, that'll be part of everything we do when we are open during that weekend and open late.
Yeah, as you say, especially for those who are really keenly interested in astronomy beyond just the spectacle of the solar eclipse, that'll be a great draw for them.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the groups we really hope to drive is kind of a family tourist thing. Our kids will be back in school for a week by the time we have the eclipse. So we're actually working with the school systems to try to encourage them to keep their kids in school, because this would be typically elementary bus boarding time, which could be a real problem and a real shame if people were to miss a total eclipse. So we are encouraging school districts to extend the school day so that teachers will be able to assist with all the viewing. And so that's kind of one of our pushes as well. And then the other group, so, is families. We'd love to see families that are in like places like New England that don't start school until after Labor Day. We'd love to see them come down and spend the weekend and do all that we have at the museum here. So that's kind of, those are two of the big groups we'd love to see. And we've had calls from Europe, Spain, England, and then up and down the East Coast. I had a high school teacher from Delaware call, and she wants to bring her high school students and was planning to book a hotel room. So people are coming.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? What are folks saying about how many visitors you might expect there?
Well, you know, we have never had a total eclipse, well, certainly since the museum's been open, so we have no concept of it. We'll prepare for as many as we can. And obviously we're the capital city, and we've experienced a very big growth in the last 10 years. So lots of hotels and lots of great restaurants now. So we have a world-class zoo. And of course we have the University of South Carolina, and there's a big football stadium there. So we're hoping that the university will be able to secure the fairgrounds and the football stadium, which are right next to each other, as viewing sites. So I know that we can certainly accommodate all comers.
A lot of people that I've talked to all across the country are looking at the same sort of thing, the fairgrounds or the football stadium, a place that can handle a big crowd anyway. And nobody really knows what to expect. It's interesting.
Right. We're clueless as to exactly how many, but we are definitely going to market up and down the East Coast, obviously. And we feel like with where Nashville is, I mean, there'd be kind of the Ohio River corridor might end up going toward Nashville and those parts. And we certainly hope to see folks from Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic, and into New England and all the way down to Florida make their way up Interstate 95 to see us.
So it sounds like there is a reasonable availability of accommodations in the area.
Absolutely. Yeah, we will. And in fact, we've already one of the meetings we've had is with the Hotel Association, and they were unaware of this. So one thing the museum has taken on is to kind of educate all the folks around of what's happening and make sure that we're all kind of aware.
Yeah, as you say, nobody's really ready for anything like this. It's kind of historic in nature.
It really is, and I think I've seen a total eclipse. I can't remember. I know I was a kid in New England and I saw one. And that was probably the only total I've ever seen. And it is spectacular. It's just amazing. So we are encouraging people to actually take the afternoon off and go find a nice spot to do this.
Absolutely. That's great encouragement. And, you know, you mentioned the schools. I remember being in junior high here in the Seattle area, and there was a partial eclipse, and they kept all the windows closed so we wouldn't look at it. So you're passing up a great educational opportunity here.
Yeah, no, we were concerned about that, and we have been, and we continue to be. We're fortunate. The College of Charleston has that's where our space grant consortium is, the state space grant consortium, and they have secured some NASA money to do professional development. So that will be one of the things that we do is we'll be training local informal science education folks as well as some of the lead science teachers in the state, and providing them with all of the resources they need, at least finding out ways that they can get things like glasses or make a pinhole camera, those types of pinhole viewer. So those are the things that we're already engaged in. So by this September and October, we'll have some workshops, and by next spring, we will be doing the workshops. So we received the training this fall, and then by spring, we will be training other folks around the area to do the viewing.
We're talking with Tom Falvey, Education Director at the South Carolina State Museum.
Tom, tell me what the weather is like typically in Columbia during that time of year.
Well, we have it really varies. We have, like, in this past, well, I guess July is actually not a bad sample. It can be very humid, and it usually is. We have the chance typically for afternoon thunderstorms because of the heat, but oftentimes they come and they go. Usually they're late in the afternoon. In fact, we just had one roll through that didn't about 4 o'clock here our time, which is about a half hour ago. So we do get the periodic thunderstorms, and then sometimes they go right south of us or miss us altogether. So, but it is hot and it is sunny.
Well, good, decent odds anyway of seeing the solar eclipse come August of next year.
Absolutely. We are, we'll sit tight, of course, because we will do all we can. I can imagine that if someone, and what typically happens is someone decides that there's a spot that's not ideal, I know they'll get in the car and go find a spot that is.
One wonders what the highways will look like on that day as people scramble to get to the better spot.
I have no doubt it'll be crazy. We haven't talked much to our astronomy club, and I know it's a difficult thing for astronomy enthusiasts some will want to stay and keep things kind of set up for folks, and others will probably want to flee and make their way elsewhere if the clouds come in. So but we'll stay put because that's our, you know, that's our job. So
hard to move the museum too, so.
That's right. Well, and one of the other things that we are doing is we're working with some of our local partners. We'd like to see about installing some temporary exhibits. There's the University of South Carolina, as part of the aerial collection, has all of the texts related to what he collected, which is 5,300 books and papers and ephemera on astronomy that date back to 1540. So the Piccolomini Atlas is one of those things, the first edition, Johannes Bayer Atlas. Doppelmayr, so all of the wonderful things that you can imagine are here at the University of South Carolina. So we are working with them to develop an exhibit idea. So we really want to make this kind of an astronomy weekend, and then outside of that, just a fun weekend in Columbia for people to come.
Boy, Mr. Ariel was a heck of a collector, wasn't he?
Boy, he really spent his time and resources finding some of the very best stuff, and it's just amazing that he donated all of this to us and to the university. We're very fortunate.
Well, Tom, for those of us who are not within the path of totality and are trying to figure out where we want to be on that momentous day, what's your selling point for Columbia? What's the top reasons people in Seattle might consider going there?
Well, it's a long flight from Seattle, but I'll tell you, Columbia in the past, like I said, 10 years has really developed just some beautiful downtown areas. And we have, if you like heat and you like sun, it is a great place to be. The food is outstanding. If you've never tried South Carolina barbecue and want to experience that, the people here are the best part, just absolutely wonderful, very nice, very open people. And I say that as a transplanted New Englander for many years now. Let's see, so many great reasons to be here. If you have not seen the State Museum, this truly is an amazing place. We have history, natural history, cultural history, which is history, an art collection that is amazing, as well as a science and technology floor and all of the astronomy resources we've talked about, and a 4D theater. So massive old textile mill that has been converted into a museum. So, and it is the first fully electrified textile mill in the world, or was in the 1890s. So great history, and you can come learn where Sherman rolled through and made history for good or bad, however you view that. It's always taken in different ways. So it is a wonderful place to be, a wonderful part of the South.
Tom, that answers all the questions that I had for you, unless you can think of something else you'd like to throw in for good measure.
Oh, well, one thing I think that I don't know if folks are aware of, but I'm trying to remember, but the university, I think it's in Montana, but as part of the Space Grant Consortium, they're launching, I think, 53 weather balloons. I think it's a NASA project, but it's tied with universities throughout the path. And so there will be weather balloons above clouds that will be doing a live stream throughout the day. So from the coast of Oregon all the way off the coast of South Carolina, we will be able to watch the eclipse at various points. So I think that's a really neat thing. And we plan to get our hotels and other folks, and we will stream that here, I'm sure of it. And the other thing that we will do, which we're really excited about, is we have a live stream that we do with our telescope. So if we do have a wonderfully clear day, our observatory will be dedicated to the live stream so that folks can see it from our vantage point.
That's cool. So nobody's going to miss this unless they're just not paying attention.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and we hope to get everyone's attention. It really seems that, at least in the astronomy community, the buzz is building, and a lot of even general media have covered it across the country. So I think we're going to have quite a show when we get there next summer.
Well, I know that we've been talking about it since 2012, at least, you know, when we knew we were building this. And so we have constantly been talking about what we'll do, and so we're finally getting there. We did meet yesterday with the mayor and with city council, and now the plans are truly underway for the next steps for the city to do something all out to make sure that when folks come here, they'll really see how much fun this city can be and how many great resources we have and the types of things you can do here. So expect a website soon, and we hope to have everything up by a year out.
We've been talking with Tom Falvey, Education Director at the South Carolina State Museum, which bills itself as 2017 Solar Eclipse Headquarters. Keep up with their plans online at scmuseum.org/eclipse. That's it for this edition of the Seattle Astronomy Podcast. Keep up with day-to-day news on our blog, find astronomy events on our calendar, and check out our store for recommendations for astronomy books, gear, software, and gadgets. It's all at seattleastronomy.com. The Seattle Astronomy Podcast is copyright 2016 by Seattle Astronomy. Our theme music is Aboard the Alien Craft from the album Symphony for Spaceman by Steve Combs and Delta Is. It's on freemusicarchive.org and is used under a Creative Commons attribution license. I'm Craig Scheiderer, wishing you clear skies. Thanks for listening.